Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. Vacations and other scheduling issues have prohibited us from doing a show the last few weeks, but here we are, buddy. How the heck are you?
It hasn't prohibited me. I've been at been noon to 3 Pacific with Ben Wilson the last few weeks.
You're blaming me?
You're this month-on-month off guy now.
Hey, I had to take a trip to the Midwest. I was out there on a lake, you know, the week of the 4th of July in Minnesota. Then I went to Chicago for the first time. I know you're very fond of the Windy City.
Did you go to a Cubs game?
We went to Wrigley. We saw Justin Steele's complete game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, against the Los Angeles Angels. It was a fun atmosphere there. There was singing out, "Go Cubs, go, fly the W," the whole nine. So it was a fun. We took the red line to get there to Wrigley from River North. So shout out to our people in Chicago. It was a fun experience for me. I fully endorse your city. It was a good time.
That's great. I'm glad you had a nice vacation with your wife, and now we're back to we're back just in time for all the excitement going on here, which includes three big soccer matches. There's a third place game today too that's very interesting, especially in light of Marcelo Bielsa's comments about Copa in the United States, and we'll ask Christopher Sullivan in the second hour about all three games and his thoughts moving forward.
Also, his thoughts on who should be the next manager of the U.S. men's national team. Of course, that news came out earlier this week. Greg Berhalter has been sacked, and thankfully, honestly. Like, I think they just needed to part ways with that. I'm surprised he even got the re-up when he did. But Greg Berhalter, no longer the manager for the United States men's national team as they crashed out in the group stages. Can you imagine that? Not being able to get out of a group that consisted of Bolivia, Uruguay, and Panama?
It's the first host country ever to be grouped. In Copa.
It's embarrassing. It is. It's embarrassing. Thus, the need for a change. But we got some fun games on deck for you guys today. Also have some fun guests on for you guys today. Starting 30 minutes from now, Jarrett Bailey, NFL writer for the Sporting News. He covers the Pittsburgh Steelers as he is the deputy editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He'll join us at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific to break down the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Russell Wilson's job to lose heading into training camp, but also, what's this defense going to look like? They were really good last season. Can they take it even a step further out there in the Steel City? We'll see how they match up in the AFC North. We'll get to that in 30 minutes from now. Then in hour number two, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Christopher Sullivan, former U.S. men's national team forward and soccer analyst for BN Sports, will help us break down the Copa third place match today and then the two finals tomorrow, the Euro Cup between Spain and England, and also the Copa America final as well. Let's talk about that real quick, because then we're going to preview some of these baseball games a little bit later on, and obviously the WNBA. We got the Liberty at the Sky, and we'll get into that else in the next segment as well. But we got La Roja, we got the Three Lions in the Euro Cup. Is football coming home, Mike Palm?
I don't think so. I think Spain's the best team in the world.
They've looked really good.
I mean, Emil Lamont is incredible.
16 years old.
16. What were you doing when you were 16?
Getting my license of being an idiot.
Playing for Barcelona. I just think that they're the one team that creates so many offensive chances and can defend, right? Most of these countries are one way or the other. England has certainly been living on the edge, been down against Switzerland, down late against Slovakia, and have come through, down to the Netherlands. They get the Kane penalty to get things level and win it late. So I think overall Spain's the better side, and that'll probably show over 90 minutes.
Do you like them at price? -145 at DraftKings, England +115.
I like them to lift the cup. I even like a little bit on the three-way. I don't think it goes to extra time, although England's been very good defending. Pickford's very good. If it does go to extra time, I think England has a better shot if they can get to penalties. But that being said, I think Spain wins it in regulation.
What do you make of England being able to win all these knockout stage matches after trailing at one point in the match? Like, this is usually England crumbles at this stage, and that's sort of been the narrative around this team, even though they were the tournament favorite heading into this thing. But they've showed that kind of grit and that resolve that teams of the past have never shown that have worn the England shirt.
That's true, Femi. But they've done it against, I don't want to say the Netherlands is an inferior team. Because that's more of a level game. I actually thought the Netherlands at 220 was worth a shot. But Slovakia, I mean, they're down to 90 seconds of added time, right? With a throw-in. He gets knocked out. They get another throw-in. Then they get the incredible bicycle kick, obviously, from Bellingham. And, you know, they were probably the better side in the Switzerland game, but they fall behind again in the 70th. Yep. They got it even right away and then dominated the play the rest of the way before winning in penalties. I just think they haven't. You obviously, we've talked about this, they had the easier side of the draw. 100%. Spain came through the death bracket on the other side. So we haven't seen England have to play a top three team yet. And I think their good fortune will run out tomorrow.
Yeah, I bet some England plus 425 after the group stage, once it was kind of known that, hey, England and Netherlands have a pretty easy draw, and it's likely that they'll be on a collision course heading toward the semifinal, because the other side was Spain, it was Germany, France, Portugal, just a gauntlet on the other side. And kudos to Spain for being able to get out of that thing. But I will be looking to monetize between now and kickoff tomorrow with Spain at some point. Like, minus 145 is out there as well. I think that's the path that I'll go. Could you see a Spain win to nil? Because
the thing is, Spain, absolutely,
they control the possession there, and England, they're not, I guess, willing to give up possession, but I don't think they're going to be like really gung ho for it, because Gareth Southgate tends to be a little bit more of a conservative manager.
Look, in the match against France, they got down with the header early, right? To France, 1-0, and then in the next 20 minutes, they get the lead. You know, when they got to about the 35 minute mark of the first half, they totally shut it down.
Yeah,
they changed to a much more defensive style once they got the lead, and they have the ability to do that, to dictate pace. So, you know, when they get up 1-0, should they get up 1-0, there's opportunities there to look at, depending on the time of the game, unders 2.5, under 1.5, if they get to the lead. If England gets to the lead, it's a different story as far as the total, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think if England scores first, we go over. If Spain scores first, I think there's a chance that we go under. The total goals in regular time, 2.5 is that number there. The under, minus 200. I think everyone is baking in the fact that these finals tend to be a little bit more cagey, a little bit more closer to the vest, since they are high stakes. But that is the Euro Cup final tomorrow at 3 Eastern time, noon Pacific time, between Spain and England, La Roja and the Three Lions. Let's go over to Major League Baseball, though. Last night's action, how about this? The AL East, they're restoring the feeling. Yankees, Orioles, the rivalry might be back after how things ended in that game there. The Yankees were up 4-1, bottom of the ninth. I don't think it was intentional what Clay Holmes did, but threw the ball, it ended up hitting Heston Cheersad in the head. Benches cleared. Brandon Hyde, I think, more so trying to motivate his team since they've sort of hit a skid here. But now the question is, that is Soto or Judge, are they going to get plunked in today's game, Yankees Orioles at Camden Yards?
Yeah, well, that'd be a heavy favorite. That one of the two of them is going to get hit.
Please don't be Judge.
What would you have made the price on the Cubs sweeping the Orioles to go into Baltimore? Oh, right? The Cubs were, and now they win last night, and they've got a doubleheader today, so that's very interesting as well.
Like I told you, I watched that Cubs team. Steele was amazing, but they can't hit for anything.
They can't hit. they went to Baltimore.
Blew them up.
They beat Sonny Gray last night. Hendricks got a 70 ERA, throw seven shutout innings at Bush last night. I mean, what's going on here?
Hendricks that people say should be out of the league.
Oh, they want him gone. Demote him. Back to Iowa. He starts last night, I mean, against Gray, who's been by far their best pitcher, and it's all Cubs, all one-sided. So doubleheader today because they had that rain out on the Friday night of the first game of the series when they played a month ago in St. Louis. So Cubs are actually, you know, all these teams in the NL Central are still alive.
100%.
You can't eliminate any of them. And I think Pittsburgh's really interesting right now with the young pitching. If they can find a way to score some runs, don't count the Reds out. The Cardinals are actually the team I would say I don't think is going to make the playoffs, that's in a playoff position right now.
Their offense is kind of, it leaves a lot to be desired there. I do want to get back to the Yankees and the Orioles, because it's Heel and Rodriguez. Right now, Rodriguez a favorite, minus 135, Heel plus 115, total 8.5 here. But this is a pretty massive series. I would say more so for the Yankees, given how they played since middle of June. But for the Orioles to feel good about themselves heading into the All-Star break, I don't think you want to go in there losing 5 of the last 6 and maybe even giving up the AL East lead that was given to them by the Yankees in their recent skid.
It's also a big series in Boston because these two teams are playing each other. And, you know, the Red Sox were, you know, 5 out. They could make up some ground, but they lose last night to Kansas City, and Lugo goes today. So we were actually talking about with Stormy yesterday, and Steph put in that, will Palm have a qualm, you know, future bets. You know, Wednesday, the Red Sox were 30-1 to win the East. They were 20-1 yesterday going into the day. If they'd have won, they'd have closed it even further. But that's not bad, worth a shot there. The two on top are struggling. So, but yeah, the thing I like about this game is that, oh, you're getting the Yankees at a plus price with Heel. But remember, it was the Orioles that really ended Heel's run, where he was so dominant. They get him for 9 earned that day at Yankee Stadium on that afternoon. It was like a weird Wednesday afternoon game. They killed him, and then he went in kind of a rut. His last start was good, but he had like 4 bad starts in a row. I think this price is about right.
Yeah.
For this game today, I didn't touch it.
Yeah, and I would anticipate, like, it's a good, I think it's a solid bet to make on the Red Sox to win the AL East, but I would anticipate that Baltimore goes out and gets something. Like, I know Orioles fans want Crochet, or there's other guys out there, but they're going to do something. They have too many prospects to not do something with a team that is ready to contend right now.
I think the Dodgers are going to get Crochet.
You think so?
I really believe it. Are you going to head into the playoffs with this rotation? They're not winning anything.
I mean, when they get healthier, maybe they can kind of get it together. They're so bad.
Bueller's been terrible.
Yeah, he's been bad.
I mean, Glasnow is a very false favorite. That's why I thought there was value. For now, he's finally drifted to like 30-1.
Mr. Glassman.
He was there 3-1, 4-1 with Wheeler the whole time, and he hadn't pitched well in 2 months.
Yeah, didn't make sense. His last 2 starts have been shaky. Yeah. Now he's on the IL. Some people think that there could be some tinkering, that maybe they want to get him some rest during the All-Star break and don't want to have to send him to Texas for that whole weekend. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just would never trust Tyler Glasnow to stay healthy for an entire season. He's never shown that he can. So for the Dodgers, it's a little, you know, it's a little fickle in that pitching rotation. But maybe they do go out and get Garrett Crochet, the lefty for the Chicago White Sox. All right, we're just getting warmed up here on the Lombardi Line. Coming up next, front page news, back page news. We break down the top headlines of the world of sports here on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to comprehensive team profiles with power ratings, with win total predictions, proven betting systems, and trends like how to win with our betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, and awards like MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Limited time, you can get a full year of VSiN Pro for $199. Instead of the usual $240, that's 13 months for everything VSiN has to offer. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi, 13 months, $199. Get instant access to our NFL guide. Do it today, promo code Lombardi. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. He's Mike Palm. I'm Femi Abebefe. 15 minutes from now, we got Jarrett Bailey, deputy editor of Behind the Steel Curtain and NFL writer for Sporting News, will help us break down the Pittsburgh Steelers and where they fit. And I think the toughest division in the National Football League, that is the AFC North. So we'll break that down coming up here in 15 minutes. But for now, let's get to front page news or back page news. And we'll start off with our first headline coming out of Major League Baseball. No, no, no for Paul Skenes. Paul Skenes pulled from a no-hit bid in the 7th inning due to pitch count purposes, ended up pitching 99 pitches, 11 Ks in 7 innings as he shut down the Milwaukee Brewers. Is this front page news or back page news that they pulled Skenes and didn't give him the chance to go for the no-no?
I am not as emotionally upset as many are about this.
I was upset.
Some on the network were outraged. They were tweeting. Paulie was texting me, how can they do this? He may never, ever have a shot. I said, he's never going to have another shot at a no-hitter, Paul. It's his rookie season, okay? In my heart of hearts, I believe that they knew he's starting the All-Star game. I believe that Lovello had communicated to Derek Shelton, Skenes and the Pirate organization, they were going to give him the start. And I think that factored into this decision, that he didn't want to run him out. Because if you go out and you throw even if you throw an 18-pitch eighth inning, now you're going to let him go out there for the ninth once he's got to the eighth. Yeah. And is he going to end up throwing 100, try to get 140 pitches? You know, it could run into that kind of situation. Now, at LSU, I mean, he had how many starts of over 120 pitches?
It's like every start.
One other thing here is this was a 0-0 and 1-0 ball game. So there was a lot of high leverage situations. Mm-hmm. Not like they were out to a 7-0 lead and he could pitch with some comfort. So I think it's front page news that it happened. Mm-hmm. It's front page news about this kid. I mean, this kid he's yet to, I said no false notes. That's all Ranger Suarez gives us now. But this, this kid is really no fault. So the first start against the Cubs where he couldn't get through the fifth and it rained and all that, that's really the only start you can circle and say wasn't really good.
That was the one when I was fully invested.
He's learned to, up the ladder, all the alts. He's learned to pitch deeper into games. The most impressive thing to me is he goes out there without his best stuff and without his control and battles through these innings and is able to get through it. The start at home against the Mets three starts ago and then in Atlanta on that Saturday two starts ago. I mean, I think he had the bases loaded four out of the six innings. He only gave up one run. The kid fights his way through it. So we'll never know, but I bet you he'll have another shot where he goes seven no-hit innings before it's all done.
I think the fact that it was a close game is why I wanted to see him stay in it, because you cannot trust this Pirates bullpen. And if you saw the eighth inning, like they immediately put runners on, like they were being no-hit for seven innings, they immediately, all right, hit, all right, single, boom, walk. And it's like, whoa, are they going to lose this game after Skeens give them seven brilliant innings? But they're able to get out of the jam and ultimately win it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I was talking to my wife the other day. He's like, why is he only 6-0? I was like, well, he's actually started a number of games, but they keep blowing him. Like, he leaves the game and the bullpen just blows it and he gets a no decision. But Paul Skeens, terrific. We'll talk about his potential Cy Young chances to start hour number two. But let's continue on with our headlines. This next item, front page news or back page news, signed, sealed, Devontae. Devontae Adams reportedly signed off on the quarterback change last season from Jimmy Garoppolo to Aiden O'Connell and threatened to leave the Las Vegas Raiders if change wasn't made. Is this front page news or back page news?
It's funny because Stormy and I, this was one of the sound bites that we talked about yesterday from the headline section around the league. And we took more of the angle of the betting market of O'Connell being the starter, right? Which is still like minus, is a plus.
It's like a plus 120.
Plus 120 or 123 or whatever it was. I looked at it yesterday. But I said to Stormy, very interesting in that whole conversation and an interview that he did is the fact that did he go to the Raiders? Did the Raiders go to him? Was he influential in the decision to bench Jimmy G? Which is, you know, if you're handicapping the Raiders, I believe it.
I believe it too.
It's not incredulous to believe that this happened, but it gives you a little bit of a hint into who's calling the shots in that organization. So, I mean, you know what? I'm going to say it's front page news.
I think so as well. Like, I think this gives us clear insight as to Devontae Adams. And I think that my guess is Devontae Adams, especially we saw the frustration after that disaster on Monday Night Football against the Detroit Lions. He probably had a hand to do with Josh McDaniels getting fired. Now, of course, McDaniels probably had a hand in that as well. But I think Devontae was like, hey, like, we're done here. And we saw players come out and say, if we don't hire Antonio Pierce, if Crosby said it, I'm going to ask for a trade if we don't hire Antonio Pierce. I think the players, Devontae Adams, Max Crosby, those veteran leaders who are outstanding players, they have a lot of sway in that organization. And I guess it's better as make of that as what you will. But if things go off the rails here, it's like, hey, this is what you guys all wanted. Like you all clamored and pounded the table for Antonio Pierce. I would just be kind of keeping an eye on this Raiders thing. But I think the play, though, is Aiden O'Connell to go ahead and be the week one starter, because that plus money, I think it's 50-50 at best. Mm-hmm. And the organization wants him to be the starter. And some of the players probably want him to be the starter as well. This next item from the Mecca of basketball. Front page news or back page news, big city discount. New York Knicks star Jalen Brunson re-signs with the team 4 years, $156.5 million extension, nearly $113 million less guaranteed than he's eligible to receive in 1 year. Is this front page news or back page news?
He's the anti-LeBron.
So he doesn't win. Okay.
First of all, the Mecca's in Milwaukee, all right?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
One of my favorite names of arenas, the Mecca, where Marquette used to play their games. I think this is like page 5A news. I'm not sure it's back page news. Mm. I think it's significant in what his leadership role there and the Brady-esque-like way he's trying to give them cap space. LeBron needed to do that. I mean, seriously, he needed to do that. I mean, his legacy in L.A., right now is that asterisk in the bubble NBA championship.
You're putting an asterisk on that?
Well, whatever it is, it's a straight. I put an asterisk on the Dodgers one, too, in a 60-game season.
Mickey Mouse championship?
And then they're playing in San Diego and Texas and all this nonsense. But I think it's significant in terms of the leadership role and the flexibility he gives the Knicks, but I don't know if it's a front page news for me.
No, if anything, it shows the kind of the Villanova culture that's being brewed out there in New York. And if things get off the rails and maybe Thibodeau's under the hot seat, do you call up Jay Wright and say, hey, Jay, I know TV's cool, but do you want to come coach your former players?
He earmarked the money only to be used for Jay Wright.
Maybe so. But yeah, it's Jalen Brunson, very altruistic and very unselfish of you.
Altruistic.
But I don't know if it's going to translate to actually winning a championship. All right, this next headline, front page news or back page news, seeing double in Chi-Town. Angel Reese, the rookie, has extended her double-double streak to 15 games. Reese is currently plus 600 to win WNBA Rookie of the Year.
Does DraftKings have a prop for her today? They're playing the Liberty again, this time in Chicago.
Let's look this up here real quick.
Do they have a specific? I know there's a points prop and a rebounds prop. And the rebounds prop's generally been between 12.5 and even 13.5 with her. But I wonder, can you bet the double-double? Because it should be like minus 4,000. This is a headline news. The headline news is the fix is in, Bimmy. You can cash your ticket. Did you get 9-1 on her?
I got 10-1.
I got 7. You know, you can still find close to 7
There's a lot of plus 650s that are still out there in the market. In fact, at DraftKings, I'm looking at it right now, plus 550 at DK.
They're up 7 with 6 seconds left against the Dream on camp day. Against the Dream on Wednesday. They're dribbling the ball out at half court. She's in the post screaming for the ball.
Ball.
They lob it into her. And here come the Dream to intentionally foul, like they rush to wrap her up so she could shoot the free throws to get to 10 points. They're down 7 with 6 seconds. They had no intention of fouling out at half court. But when she got them, and they said, oh, the kids, it was for the kids. They were there. The whole league is in on this. I did this on no hyperbole. Number one, not like us. Okay? There's no way they're letting Caitlin Clark win this. We had Professor Aaron Moore on yesterday, and I said, Professor, your task over the next week is to research these 50 people that vote on these WNBA awards.
Is it even that many? I think it's like 15.
No, I saw 56. Saw he said 50.
Okay, I thought
it was a combination of writers and broadcasters. I want to know who the group is.
I think it's important in this one.
It's incredible. It's like the year Ted Williams won the triple. Was that 46 or 47? But they gave it to Mickey Mantle because the media did not like Williams. Now, it's not like not liking Caitlin, but there's broader social issues here.
Yeah.
I mean, I really believe I would keep betting her at 5-1 or better because this is much closer than the market suggests.
And that's what all I've been saying this whole time. I said, like, yeah, based on just specific merit and basketball, Clark probably should be the Rookie of the Year. But the right answer isn't the answer. No. The answer is whatever their answer is. Right. That group is the voters. And all the voters or people who are voter adjacent are telling you that this is a really, really close race. So I just keep an eye on this WNBA Rookie of the Year market because I don't think the market has it really nailed. All right, Jared Bailey joins us next to break down the Pittsburgh Steelers and the AFC North.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm hanging out here on the DraftKings Network. We do have Jared Bailey from the Steel Curtain joining us here momentarily, but until we get him on the line, we want to continue this conversation about WNBA Rookie of the Year. Actually, we do have Jared Bailey ready to roll here. He's a sporting news writer, deputy editor at the Behind the Steel Curtain, breaks down the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to help us break it down here on the Lombardi Line. Jared, thanks for hanging out with us and joining us this morning. I'll start off here because I think a lot of people in the betting community, and it's been something that has been kind of turned into a joke, is that Mike Tomlin has never been below 500. Is this the year that the Steelers maybe go under that number? Right now the win total is at 8.5. How do you see the Steelers 2024 playing out?
No, man, I can't see them being somehow worse than they were a year ago. I mean, you look at what they had at quarterback with Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky, and then Mason Rudolph finishing out the year actually relatively strong. And they still somehow scavenged 10 wins out of that dumpster fire that they had under center. So when I look at the improvements that they've made across the board at quarterback, offensive coordinator, a lot of defensive additions, I don't see how they'll somehow be worse than they were a year ago. It feels like every year we kind of do this same cycle where, you know, the Steelers finish better than what everybody expects. And then we go through the offseason. Everybody's like, oh, this is going to be the year. Finally, the downfall of the Steelers. And ultimately, it doesn't happen. So haven't had a losing record since 2003. Mike Tomlin's obviously never had a losing record. You pointed out that that's kind of the a running joke at this point. 8.5, I think, is a little bit low. Like I said, I can't see them finishing lower than or with a worse record than what they had a season ago, just because they've gotten better across the board.
I wanted to ask Jarrett about Arthur Smith and what that will mean for the Steelers offensively. How do you feel the line is going to hold up in terms of them running the football, and how inclined will Arthur Smith be to want to emphasize the run game?
Well, if you look at the rate at which teams ran last year, the Falcons ran at 44% of the time. The Steelers ran at 43% of the time. So pretty similar in terms of how often they ran the ball. It's going to be a little different in terms of the style in which they're going to do it. Arthur Smith loves those outside zone type of runs, inside zone, where last year the Steelers were more of a gap type run team. So, but Arthur Smith also touched on the fact that he doesn't want the offense to get stale, and that he is, you know, more than willing to work in different things that these new offensive linemen that they have, especially the athletic ones, where you have a Troy Fatanu and a Zach Frazier, and then even Broderick Jones, who's very good at getting into space and blocking downfield. So I'm looking forward to seeing this new offense. I'm looking forward to seeing how both Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren fare in it. But well, we know what Arthur Smith can do, and we've seen back in 2019 and 2020, over that 2 year span when he was the offensive coordinator in Tennessee, only the Chiefs had a higher success rate offensively than the Titans did during that span. So I'm not saying I expect that, but I do expect a massive leap forward for the Steelers. And when you look at where the bar is, I mean, it's very low. So even if they're, you know, the 18th best offense in football this year, that's still a massive improvement from where it's been over the past couple of years.
We're hanging out with Jarrett Bailey, writer for the Sporting News, also deputy editor for Behind the Steel Curtain, breaking down the Pittsburgh Steelers here on the Lombardi Line. Well, let's talk about the passing game of this, because they bring in Russell Wilson, also went and brought in Justin Fields to be the backup quarterback. But do you see Wilson and Arthur Smith being a fit? Because I think a lot of people might have some concerns about, hey, Russell Wilson doesn't really love to throw the ball over the middle of the field, and that's typically where Arthur Smith's offenses have found success in the passing game. Will these two be able to be a fit in 2024?
Yeah, that's one of the bigger questions that people have had. But I push back a little bit on that with this. The other aspect in which Arthur Smith's offenses have been very good at throwing the ball is the play action passing game. And when you look at how Russell Wilson has done in that aspect, especially passing the ball downfield, that's one aspect of his game that hasn't taken a step back. If, you know, just have some numbers in front of me. Last year, on passes of 25 more air yards, fourth in completions, he was third in the NFL in yards off of passes 25 or more yards downfield, seventh in passer rating and passes 20 or more yards downfield with play action. So that type of, or that element with the passing game is only going to lean into what Russell Wilson does well. So say what you want about the past couple of years. Obviously he's in Pittsburgh now for a reason, because things didn't work out in Denver. But one thing that he can still do well is chuck it. And, you know, seeing him up close in person throughout OTAs and mini camp, that is still one element of his game that he still very much has. And so in terms of the, you know, the intermediate in the middle of the field type of things, I think, again, that will very much, you know, lean on how good the run game is, how much, you know, if they can draw more defenders into the box and, you know, have, you know, Calvin Austin or Roman Wilson run these intermediate in breakers to, you know, set up their quarterbacks for success. But I think that overall, Russ is, you know, in a good spot with Arthur Smith, and we'll see how the intermediate stuff works out. But the deep ball, that's something that hasn't gone away.
Jarrett, on the defensive side of the ball, my question is, what are the Steelers doing to address the nickel cornerback? I haven't really seen them make any moves since Mike Hilton left for the Bengals.
Well, I mean, they signed Cam Sutton this past offseason after he was released by Detroit after being arrested for a domestic violence incident. He was obviously suspended for the first 8 games of the year. So they'll get him back week 10 after the week 9 bye. But outside of that, they signed undrafted rookie free agent Beanie Bishop out of West Virginia, who was a consensus All-American last year. I believe he led the FBS in passes broken up. So one of those guys that just somehow slid through the cracks, who was tremendous a season ago at West Virginia. They picked him up. And they also have Darius Rush on their roster, who was a rookie last year. Didn't get a ton of playing time on defense last year, but still a guy that they have in their system. Other guys, you know, Josiah Scott. Maybe we'll see Corey Trice maybe get some reps during training camp and preseason at at the nickel spot, but I think he's predominantly going to be an outside guy. So, yeah, I push back on the thought that some Steelers fans have that they need to immediately rush out right now and sign somebody because of the Cam Sutton suspension. The reason that, training camp and preseason is important so you can see what you have in these guys. I think that we're going to find out, okay, is Beanie Bishop going to be good enough to step in for 2 months while Cam Sutton is suspended? Or is, Adarius Rush going to be good enough to do that? We're going to find that out very soon. So they signed Cam Sutton for that reason, just to give them a reliable vet that they, had had in the building for 6 years at that spot. And then the suspension obviously hinders that somewhat. But, they have guys that they brought in to compete, knowing full well that when they signed Cam Sutton that a suspension was coming. So again, I don't think that they should get trigger happy. I think that they should see what they have, and then come middle of preseason or at the end of preseason when we get some surprise cuts, which we know we will. If you don't feel confident in either of them, then go out and get somebody that can fill that spot.
Jared, we got a couple minutes left here. For my money, the AFC North is the best division in all of football. You said that you don't anticipate the Steelers having a drop off in what they did last year when they went 10-7. The betting market has a different opinion. They're sitting at 8.5 alongside the Cleveland Browns. I guess, how do you see the AFC North stacking up this year with Baltimore and Cincinnati, at least on the outside, being seen as legitimate Super Bowl contenders?
I look at the Ravens and I wonder why nobody talks about the massive turnover that they've had this offseason. Lost what, 3/5 of their offensive line. Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, is gone, and he was absolutely instrumental in how great their defense was a season ago. Geno Stone's gone. Patrick Queen's gone, and both of them stayed in the division. Geno Stone went to Cincinnati. Patrick Queen went to Pittsburgh. So when I look at Baltimore, I think, and I wrote about it this past offseason, I think for right now, that Super Bowl window is probably closed. You look at how well they perform in the playoffs against, the top tier teams. They don't perform well. Lamar Jackson's had 2 games against Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, and the Ravens have scored a combined 13 points in those games. And the Ravens are 0-4 in the Lamar Jackson era during the playoffs when their opponent scores more than 13 points. So I think that they are a little bit overrated in that light. I think when Cincinnati is completely healthy, they're the best team in the division. And I think that they feel a sense of pressure because this is kind of their last, their last hoorah with this group. T. Higgins is going to be gone after this year. So I think that they're viewing this very much as a swan song with this current group. Cleveland is interesting just because they're getting their starting quarterback back from injury, and I think it makes them worse. I don't think we're going to see Deshaun Watson revert back to a guy he was 4 years ago. So I'm, in terms of the hierarchy, if I had to rank them right now how I think they'll finish, I think it will go Bengals winning the division, followed by Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cleveland as of right now.
Wow, I love it. I think it can go in any direction, which is why I love this division here. There's not a team in that division that if they won it, I would be surprised. But I think it's going to be a fun thing to track all throughout this 2024 NFL regular season. He is Jared Bailey. Find him on Twitter at JBaileyNFL. Does great work for the Sporting News and W editor behind the steel curtain. Jared, thanks for waking up with us, man, and be well.
Absolutely, boys. Take care.
Thank you.
Stuff there. I agree with him on Baltimore. I bet that if we win total under 11.5 at -140, that continues to tick down. But I think the Ravens will be a good team. I just don't see them being that elite team that they were last.
Oh, they're going to regress.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati's going to pick up the pieces. And Cleveland, I'm with him. Huh? Watson.
He's a big question mark. All right. We'll wrap up hour number one coming up next year with Major League Baseball.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abefefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, you can get some soccer plays on the pitch with Nigel Seeley and Matt Williams are breaking down the Euro Cup, also the Copa America, Argentina, Colombia, then in the Euros, we have La Roja against the Three Lions. That's Spain versus England tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. But get all those and much more of the expert analysis at VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. This is Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palmer hanging out on the DraftKings Network. Thank you to Jarrett Bailey of the Behind the Steel Curtain, who joined us in the last segment breaking down the AFC North as well as the Pittsburgh Steelers. But let's get into some Major League Baseball.
Wait, Femi.
Can
we get to the last headline?
We want to go back to the front page?
The final headline.
Okay. I figured that you might want to touch on that since you are an Iowa guy. We had no time for it when we did a couple segments ago, but let's get to it right now. Front page news or back page news. Iowa's got that new. The Iowa State Fair is adding 84 new foods this year, including deep fried hot Cheetos pretzel, deep fried bubble gum, and tequila funnel cake among them.
This is not only back page news. It belongs in a weekly periodical.
You're doing your state like that.
Well, listen, I calls them as I sees them. All right. There's no biases here. Femi, I went to one state fair. My father took us to a state fair every year. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in Des Moines.
Did you go to the Minnesota one?
Wisconsin.
Oh, you went to the Wisconsin one? How much cheese was being fried there?
The beer. My father said he never tasted beer as cold. We would always go see one certain act.
Who'd you see?
Every year, the headliner of the Wisconsin State Fair, Alabama. 38-time country music performers of the year or something. I mean, they had a big run, you know?
Apparently.
It's just my life.
Went to the Wisconsin?
From like age 4 to 12. I got to go see Alabama. Oh, it's not far.
Okay.
2.5 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean,
Des Moines is three for us. So, but
that's true.
It was good. It was very, very good. The Wisconsin State Fair.
What was the highlight? Was it like, I mean, cheese curds, I'm sure, is top five. Oh, yeah. The food is great.
The food is great. And my father just loved the cold beer. He said, you can't find any colder beer. Another beer tent, Ron, my mother would say. He said, let's sit down.
Is he a spotted cow guy? Did they have it back then? I don't even know if they had it.
I don't even remember. Did they have Leinenkugel? I mean, I didn't know Mitch Moss back then. Never been to Eau Claire or Bloomer, all those Western Wisconsin haunts.
I've been to Green Bay before. It was a nice place. Titletown.
We would go to Milwaukee, which is closer, right? It's farther south.
Yep.
Remember when the Packers would play 4 games at Lambeau and 4 at County Stadium? So we would always go to a game at County Stadium. Yeah. Brewers games, Packers game, Blue Mound Road.
And then Brian Ortega bought the team.
Yep.
two-time owner, Brian Ortega, our producer, with a share of the Green Bay Packers, who maybe this year, maybe they could represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. That's the discussion a little bit later on this summer. Brian Ortega said he's bought his tickets. Did you buy the flight to New Orleans already? Get you your tickets ready to roll for, what is it, Super Bowl 57 or 58? I don't even know what Super Bowl it is anymore. We're up there is essentially what we're saying. But Major League Baseball today, we talked about Yankees-Orioles. That's a fun game, of course. Big game in the AL East. Royals and the Red Sox, another big game in the AL wild card race. We also have an interesting kind of interleague battle, Dodgers and the Tigers. Last night, how about Tarek Skubal, I always get it confused. Skubal, 6 innings, 2 earned. Another big strikeout day for him as he continues to go on this AL Cy Young favorite path, which we'll talk about in the next segment here. But what stands out to you on today's Major League Baseball card?
I played 2 games, Femi. I played Seth Lugo again. Now, we lost last Saturday night. They got him no run support in Denver. He pitched well, 2 earned over 6. They lose 3-1 in that game. But we cashed with him, three Saturdays ago when he was a $2 dog against the Dodgers. I'm going to come back with him as a dog today in Boston just because I know the consistency that I'm getting. The Royals have started hitting a little more after they went through a little bit of a swoon. You know, Crawford's okay, Cutter Crawford, but I don't know that he's anything special. And getting a plus price with Lugo here. Pitching today on Saturday means he's probably, you know, what's he going to do in the All-Star game?
But yeah, it's probably out of the running to
right?
start.
Because of the timing of it for him. So I did take him. And then, look, you mentioned it earlier on a pick'em game. Padres have lost 5 in a row. I'm going to take Ronaldo Lopez and the Braves here in this game against Cease. You know what I found amazing? So, when you look at it here, Lopez is 7-2. The ERA is 1.71. The WHIP's 1.13. Cease is 7-8 with an ERA of 4.2. Similar WHIP. Cease has pitched 20 more innings, 109-89. But basically, they're the same odds in the Cy Young market in some places. They're both around 35-40-1, right?
Incredible.
It's really incredible. And Gil's point was the value probably in the market with Lugo having crashed down a bit is Lopez. But those are my two plays today. So Braves with Lopez and at a pick'em in San Diego. Here at DraftKings, you get plus 110. So I bet it on the overnight because I actually thought they would bet Lopez here. So I have a minus 105 and I have Lugo plus 115.
Is there any concern with you with Lopez of regression coming soon, because some of the underlying metrics show that he's been good, but not great like the basic metrics show.
But you're going against a team right now that's scuttling. After they went on that run of, what, 12 games where they were averaging 8 runs a game?
They were hot there for a second.
And now they've scuttled. They didn't score against Seattle. I get it. Seattle's got a good pitching staff. But they've kind of, you know, they're limping into the All-Star break. They kind of clearly... They were, what, 6 games over 500? We said, well, they're going to be one of the wild cards. That's the one we know in the National League besides the Braves, Phillies, which looks like the Braves because the Phillies keep going, despite Suarez getting beat by the A's last night after sweeping the Dodgers.
Unbelievable.
Right? And that was going to be the other one, and now it was going to be like a 5-team race for the third spot, but now they're back in the mix. Diamondbacks are over 500 for the first time all year right now today, Femi. This is the first time all year. They've been at 500 5 times. They had lost all those next games. They finally won it on their 6th attempt last night, rallying late to beat the Blue Jays in Phoenix. So they're right in the mix as well. So those are the two plays.
Is that a team that you'd want to back? Because, I mean, they've had so many injuries to that staff. They're 22-1 to win the NL. I mean, maybe Eduardo Rodriguez eventually makes a debut for Arizona. They get some other guy, Merrill Kelly, getting back. Zach Gallen just came back, although he's touch and go based on whether it's a home game or a road game. They do, at their peak, have some pretty good arms when they're healthy. Is this a team that maybe could make another magical run to the World Series?
Well, I think Pfad's been okay. I still say Pfad, whether it's Pfad or... I say Tariq, too.
Yeah. But
Yulber Diaz is making his second start. He was awesome. His first start out, I watched. They've had some decent young guys. Last night, Ryan Nelson. I wish he'd have a little more control over his breaking stuff, because he gets into those ruts where, you know, he needs a strikeout and he's going to throw 9 straight fastballs and just keep trying to elevate it. But when they get fully healthy, I think they become dangerous. So when you're looking for teams at 20-1 or better, they're certainly in the mix.
You mentioned the Pittsburgh Pirates is a team that could be interesting. They're 110-1 to win the National League. Now, I don't expect that to happen. Of course, they still have some work to do just to get into the postseason. Right now, 2.5 back of that final wildcard spot. But we do sit here with the All-Star break on the horizon coming up after Sunday's games. Is there a futures bet that you really like in the National League? Would it be a Pittsburgh at that massive price? Or is there someone else there that's in the mix that you think that could potentially make a run at this thing? With the Dodgers, you know, we know their postseason history. It's not great. So it's like you don't really want to go ahead and back that. Now, Philadelphia, I think, is a team that's going to ultimately win the NL. That's not really like hot take-ish. They're the best record in all of baseball. But could they maybe be taken down, as we saw last year with Arizona doing it in Philadelphia?
Well, baseball, anybody can. You know, the hot teams get in, the team that won 8 out of 9 to get in the wild card, and they just keep rolling into the playoffs. It happens. It's the sport where it's least likely that the favorite is going to win it. I've been anti-Dodgers since the spring.
February.
Yeah. Well, I have been. And I look at their rotation right now. Are you kidding me? And that's not to say they won't go out and get pieces. But look, Nola's pitched better. I've stayed away. You know, I'm a fade Nola guy. He's been good. He's been competing. He's had the shutdown innings this year. Wheeler's been very solid. Now Suarez is started to tail off and regress. The kid Christopher Sanchez is good. Really good. He's really good. I told a couple friends, I'm like, watch this kid because his stuff is awesome. I like the Phillies. I like their lineup. When I look at the Pirates, I just look at this lineup and say, where are they going to generate 4 runs every game, right? Day in and day out. Now they're playing the White Sox, so they got a chance to keep this momentum going into the break. The starting pitching's been decent. I question the bullpen a little bit. I'm not ready to go all in. They're a team I also think, if they do get in, even though, you know, what I've said about hot teams and that, tough to win a 7-game series for a team like that when you go, you know, if you're trying to bet them to win the NL or the World Series.
Yeah. I mean, how about Marco Gonzalez getting a win yesterday?
Yeah.
This is my former guy from the Mariners. He was able to get something done against the Chicago White Sox. How about in the American League, real quick, before we wrap this up in this first hour? Yankees somehow are the favorites at +270, Orioles +360, Guardians +550, but it's a little bit more jumbled than the AL.
I'd bet the Astros.
They don't die, do they?
They won't die. They won't. I'm looking at them.
I sat here.
What are they, a game out now?
It was a month ago when the Mariners had that big league. I said, if there's any team that I would bet in the AL West, it's the Houston Astros.
I had the ticket not to make the playoffs. I bet the second week of the year when Framber went on the IL and Javier was already on it. And I said, and they were like 3-9 and it was +180. I'm like, this number's going to get away from me if this team is tanking. Not tanking, but it's a really bad year. I could have bet the other way at +220 at one point, and I didn't. And now, they're not only going to make it, they're going to win the division, I think.
Rosin Blanco kept them afloat.
There's a guy who also due for a regression, but it doesn't come, right?
It never comes. We'll talk about that on the other side. Awards coming up next to start hour number.